Welcome. This is Gary Parr, and you are going to be listening to Fiber Talk in just a couple of minutes. But first, I want to thank and welcome our sponsor, Sassy Jack Stitchery in Weaverville, North Carolina. I encourage each of you to support Kim Young and Sassy Jack's with your needlework purchases. And when you do, please mention that you heard about Sassy Jack's on Fiber Talk. And now, before we listen to my conversation with Ronnie Rowe of Ronnie Rowe Designs, a few words from Kim Young.
This edition of Fiber Talk is proudly sponsored by Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant young needlework shop located on the picturesque Main Street of Weaverville, North Carolina. Sassy Jack's shares a beautifully renovated historic building with Five Little Monkeys Quilt Shop. This year, we are happy to welcome you to a fantastic new classroom venue above our two shops. The classroom is well equipped with two large audiovisual screens, excellent new lighting, and seminar table seating. This beautifully renovated historic building even boasts the only elevator in town. We are proud to welcome Beth Sill of Summerhouse Stitchworks August 2nd and 3rd. Beth always brings a beautiful project with some fun and easy finishing tips. And if you can't make it to the Summerhouse Stitchworks class in August, or even if you can, we're super excited to invite you to our first ever September Soiree Stitch Retreat, September 19th through 22nd. The September Soiree Stitch Retreat features just us and your whips. No class fees, no new projects, just some fabulous food, friends, and a little sassiness from your favorite shop. This retreat will be a fun little escape with time to catch up on all those other projects you've gathered during the year. We hope you find a way to come visit us soon. If you can't make it to us, then visit us on Facebook or Instagram. We love it when you stop by and say hi, whether it's in person or online. We truly appreciate you. And we really appreciate all the good things we hear and learn from Fiber Talk. We are super proud to be a sponsor of this wonderful resource of stitching goodness. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for giving us some stabby pokey talk twice a week. Kim and team at Sassy Jack Stitchery.
Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr. You are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for the fine art needle and thread folks. And the guys are taking over this week, folks. The guys are taking over. Ronnie Rowe Designs is with me. Hi, Ronnie.
Hey, Gary, how are you? Glad to be with you today.
Yep, thanks for doing this. Yep, it's an all-male Fiber Talk. Yay.
Well, there's one thing for sure. There's not a lot of males doing what I do.
No, there is not. There is not. Yeah, that's the thing I'm most anxious to talk to you about is we're both in the same position. We're in the role reversal position here. And I've been doing needlework since college, which is a frightening number of years now. And really didn't, you know, I mean, I did it. I didn't hide it, but I sure didn't broadcast it till, you know, as you get later in life, you start to care less what people think. Because, you know, when you're yeah, when you're 30 years old and you say, hey, I do needlework, it's like, what's wrong with you? But, yeah, I don't care anymore. I just don't.
Neither do I.
Yeah. So how did you get started doing this?
Well, Gary, I've been in needlework for approximately 40 years now.
Okay, so we're in the exact same boat then.
Right. And the way I really got started was my wife was doing counted cross stitch. And, of course, I'm sitting back at night watching a ball game, basketball, football, or whatever. And she was, and I talked to her, and she said, be quiet, I'm counting. I heard all the time, I'm counting. So, anyway, she told me, why don't you try it? And I said, well, I'm not interested. And she said, no, go ahead. Just try it. I got this little design. It's an owl, and it's really simple. And just try it. So I sat down with a little hoop, and she got me the thread and the cloth and gave me the little hoop. And I made a few mistakes, didn't go over the right way. But anyway, I did it, and it was okay. I wasn't really excited about it. So, but anyway, it got my attention some kind of way because I told her, go get me something big to do. I don't want to do something little, some little cutesy thing. I want to do something big. I said, because the way I figured, if I can make one square, I can make 100.
Right. Right.
So she went to one of the local needlework shops and a craft store at that time and bought some book with some buildings in it. And it was a book by Judith Sandy. That was a lady. I don't believe she's with us anymore, but it was one of the earlier designers, Judith Sandy. And there was a book called Timeless Designs. And so I took that book and I made several designs and they turned out okay. You know, I was just doing them out of somebody else's pattern. And at the time I was working and I had a friend of mine making frames. So he made the frames and we framed them all up and went to a local craft shop, a store, a craft fair where I'm located. And we paid $50, $60 of what it was. We sat there and he sold frames and I sold some of my designs, some of these designs.
Uh-oh. And, now we got something. Yep.
Right. We got something. I'm sitting there figuring, here I am sitting out here on a beautiful Saturday afternoon and somebody has bought these. They bought these things. Now, granted, I put a lot of hours in stitching them. But that really didn't matter because it was off time anyway. So they bought them, and so I did some more. So I told my wife, you know, I think I can do a design. I'm going to do one myself. And at the time, my mother had an old farmhouse where we live. So I went down, took a picture of it. Of course, there was no digital photography back then. It was, you know, you had to go buy film.
Right, right.
So I took some pictures.
So you didn't waste any time getting to the design part at all then?
No, not really. Not really. Because I was sitting there. I did a whole bunch of these that I was out of somebody else's. And I figured, all it is a bunch of squares. Why can't I do this? You know, why can't I design something? So anyway, I did that one. And it turned out okay. It wasn't anything special. It was just okay. So anyway, I got the wild idea just out of the blue that I was going to Colonial Williamsburg. I'm very close there. I'm about 15 miles from Colonial Williamsburg. So I went down to Colonial Williamsburg, took a bunch of pictures of a lot of their historic buildings, came back, and sat down with a pen or a pentagraph pen and some graph paper, started making little X's, drew the thing out the best I could, and made some designs. And after I had them, I had a friend of mine in the printing business.
Now, I got to stop you right there. Anybody that says they have a rapidograph pen, I remember those days.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of people don't, Gary.
Yeah, that's some serious writing instrument or drawing instrument there. Oh, yeah. So did you have an art background then? I mean, to own pens like...
I had an art background. I started work back in the late 60s in Newport News Shipbuilding Dry Dock Company as a designer.
Okay.
And I was working on the... aircraft carriers designing crew living spaces aboard the John F. Kennedy. And so I had somewhat knowledge of design. And getting on that, after that, I left and went on to NASA as a graphic designer. I went there and did a lot of design work. So I had some familiarity with design, rapidograph pens.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that. Of course, at that time, Gary, we didn't have any computers.
Oh, no. Well, and those pens, those were the Cadillac of pens, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there was none of that. But anyway, I went and made some of these. I had a friend of mine in the printing business, and he went out and he printed some of these designs that I had, I think 25, 30 copies, just in black and white on a piece of paper. And one Saturday morning, went up to Williamsburg. They had several needlework shops up there. And I couldn't believe it. I went in there and they bought my designs. They liked them. They actually bought a piece of paper for me. I couldn't, at the time, see, I was selling these ones that were, I'd already cross-stitched.
Right.
And going to a fair. Now I got somebody buying a piece of paper. Couldn't believe it. So I came home that day, told the wife, and the following week they ordered more of them.
Oh.
And so that's really the way it got started for me.
When you did the design, so you did a whole gridded design for the printer?
Oh, yeah. I gave him everything to print, and I and he would do my printing for me, just in black and white now. This was no color.
Right, right.
And, of course, I'd give the people the dimensions and give them the DMC numbers on the back, and, you know, very, very rustic.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, that was about all we had. That went on for 2, 3, 4 years, however how long. And one day, one evening, I got a phone call from a lady up in Williamsburg. It ran the on Needlecraft Corner, Sherry Barnett. She ran the soap and candle factory up in Williamsburg, and said they would have a little reception, and some people were coming in from Hoffman Distributing. And I wanted to know if I'd bring some of my designs up and, you know, display. And I said, sure, I will. So I went up there, and they had the little wine and cheese party, and I met the Hoffmans. And I'll never forget that Phyllis Hoffman looked at me and asked me who was doing my distribution. I said, well, my distribution is me getting in the car coming up here every Saturday morning. That's distribution of these things. I mean, distribution. And she told me, she said, well, if you put these in color, color leaflets, I will distribute them for you. You know, and so, and to be honest with you, Gary, I kind of blew it off.
Right,
I kind of
right.
Lady, you're gonna distribute these all over everywhere for me.
I love this. All of this is happening. You have no clue, basically, what's going. You're just going with the flow.
I got no plan. I got no marketing plan. I got nothing, Gary. The only plan I got is to go over to Billy Wood, get more copies, and go up to Williamsburg next Saturday morning and sell them some more. That's the only plan. Well, I got home. And a couple of weeks after that, I guess it was, I got a phone call from Phyllis and asked me what my plans were to put them in color. And I said, well, and I got thinking about it. And I said, well, I'll look into it. So my wife and I sat down. We figured I had three pretty good designs of the courthouse, the governor's palace, and another one I can't recall right now in Williamsburg. So we went over to Norfolk, Virginia, and found a printer, and I printed 7,500 of each one of these leaflets.
7,500?
7,500. That was the only price you could get for them. You had to get a lot of them to get the price, you know, because we had already talked to some other people about trying to get into a trade show in Charlotte, North Carolina. We went and printed them, went to Charlotte, North Carolina, in an old station wagon, set up shop there. I was on the second floor behind the water cooler next to the elevator, somewhere up there. Nobody knew Ronnie Road Designs was. I mean, and we sat there for 3 days, and the Hoffmans came through, and they picked my designs up, ordered a lot of them, like a lot of other people did, and it was a huge success. I mean, no question. I mean, we were thrilled going home because we had sold more than we ever anticipated selling at that time. And from there on, it just kind of took off. But nothing, all of this is, there is no plan. Trust me, there is no plan in this at all.
your wife must just shake her head every now and then.
Oh, she's shaking her head because you know, here I am. I'm working at NASA.
Right.
I mean, what I'm doing in cross stitch is just, hey, it's a hobby. It's fun. We're having a good time.
Right.
If somebody buys it, fine. Somebody don't buy it, that's okay too.
Yep.
You know, so that's the way we always looked at it. And but anyway, it kind of took off from there, Gary.
Well, and you're still, I mean, known for, I mean, that's what, when I first encountered you is those black and white buildings. I mean, that really, to me, even, I don't care how old they are, those are standout designs. And you must still sell quite a few of those, huh?
I sell a lot of them. And I started out with the color designs of Williamsburg buildings. And then I thought, well, I got to do something different. I've got to come up with something new. And I was at a local art show one day, and a lady was sitting back with a repetograph pen, another repetograph pen. And she was an artist and putting little dots all over and making a design. Beautiful.
Oh, sure. Yep.
So, with a pen, with little dots. And I thought, you know, maybe if I do a building or some scenes or something with just black and white. It's just, you know, out of the blue. And I said, well, I thought I'd do that. So I tried one. It looked pretty good. And then I did several more. And anyway, they took off pretty well. And I was going to call them. I had to come up a name with it. So I called it the Pen and Ink Series.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, it's just what I thought of at the time.
No, we had an artist at one of the early magazines I worked on. And one of the signature things with every article was a pen and ink headshot, a drawing of the author of each of the articles. And mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was brilliant talent, just brilliant, but he would do that same technique to do the pen and ink things. And of course it would take him forever and we're under deadline. And at some point it's like, Ed, really just finish that up. It's all of 2 inches tall, you know, finish it up so we can move on. But
But
the minute I saw your black and white, your pen and ink designs, that was immediately who I thought of, because it really is reminiscent of that very technique. Yes.
Well, the pen and inks, I found those a lot more difficult than I did the color, what I did in color, because all the color buildings I used to do and all the Williamsburg or those are the various buildings up there. I could sit down and get the perspective right on something, and you have a corner or something. You couldn't figure out something. And I used to tell people, if I couldn't figure out something on one of those buildings, I'd just put a bush or a tree in front of it. You know, I mean, it looked good. I could do a bush or a tree. So that was kind of a filler. But the black and whites, you had to account for the white material with the black thread, because
right.
Everything white you're seeing on that is the material.
Right.
And it's almost like a watercolor, but they took a long time. I spent a lot of time on those, and I'd get some of it done and get frustrated and put it down or throw it down and take it back. I put a lot of time in those black and whites.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it's got to be hard to get the perspective right and the density just right. And
Right. You got to get that, because remember, a lot of my black and whites, it looks like shading too.
Right.
You use a shading, but you're still using just black thread.
Right.
Not using any offset grays or any of those colors.
Yeah, no, that's just it. Yeah. It's just one color deal there for you.
It's a one color deal. And so, but anyway, that was, I really enjoyed those. And as you said, again, today, they're one of my best sellers today.
Anyone doing your design, stitching a bush, that's covering up what you couldn't get right. I love it.
That's exactly right. That covers up what I couldn't figure out. So, but it looked okay.
Sure. Sure.
Every one of these things, every one that I have ever done, right up to what I'm working on right now. I mean, I have put everything into every design I've done. And if I didn't think it was good and if I didn't think it was right, I didn't put it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it. Number one, it had to satisfy me.
Right.
If I wasn't satisfied with it, you know, I just did them for me, what I liked.
So you're doing all this initial design work and putting all these things together, and you're working a full-time job on top of it.
Yeah, right, full-time job. I'm doing this at nights after the kids' baseball, soccer practices, and all of that. And, you know, sitting there just picking at it.
Right.
I sit down for an hour. Sit down an hour with my Petrograph pen and just sit down there and put dots and just see what I could come up with. Work a little bit at a time. And then what I was doing at the time also, I was stitching this thing as I'm going along, because every one of these things you see at the shows and everything, I stitched every stitch on those.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're doing your own models, yeah.
I did every stitch on everything I've done. There's nobody... You know, I don't hire people to go out and stitch and that. I stitched them. Because what I was doing with the black and whites, I would stitch as I went along designing.
Okay.
So I had to keep up with where I was, and I had to get it right the first time, because you can't go back and pull a whole section out if it's not right. You have to have it right.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of planning. I really did put a lot of planning into them.
Yeah, you can pull it out, but it's not a pleasant exercise. So you're working a design on paper and with thread parallel then?
Absolutely. I do it in parallel, but the first thing I do with a design, if I come up with some of the faces, like the last ones I did, the faces, the first thing I have to do is make sure the eyes, the nose, the mouth, and all perspective is right on the design. Everything else around that is filler. It's stuff that you can put in.
Yeah.
Like for a building, if I did a building, I had to make sure that all the dimensions were right, windows, doors, perspective. The bush could have limbs going right, left, up and down, anywhere.
Right.
But the building had to be right.
Yeah.
So I kind of worked from the center out, really.
Mm-hmm. What's harder to do, animate objects or buildings in terms of that?
I guess buildings are. The buildings were the hardest part. I guess the hardest ones I've ever done, let me think, is probably the City Living series. I did some row houses. They were difficult. And some of the New England ones. I did one I called the Lobster House, and that was a picture I had taken up in New England some years ago, this old wharf house. And I decided to put a rope in front of it. So I drew a rope in front of it to give it some perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What my hardest part of that was the lobster had, the house was on pylons going into the water, and you had to be able to see underneath the house and the pylons shading behind that. So I spent a lot of time on shading, trying to get all the proportions right on that kind of stuff. That's I enjoy that more than anything else, because you actually have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you have to think of what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see where that would be a real challenge. Can you perceive that it's open underneath there, and then there's water
open
under
up,
that?
Yeah, but you don't want to make it too much, and you don't make it too little. It has to be a subtle appearance. It's underneath.
Yeah.
And to do that on a 45, you know, using squares, that took some time.
Yeah. So what were you, when you were doing the grid patterns, were you just doing that on grid paper, or how were you doing that?
I was doing it on grid. I was taking a piece of a regular grid paper, and I was putting it on a plastic. And then I was using a copy machine. I would copy and have a plastic grid, take a photograph, and put the grid on top of the photograph at sometimes. And
oh,
use
okay.
A pentagraph pen, almost like a tracing thing, but you really couldn't trace it, but you had to get your perspective right doing it that way.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, the days before software.
the days before software. If I'd have what I have available to me now as a designer back in the mid-70s, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yep. No, I'm working on a chart right now that is back from those days where all the symbols are hand drawn in.
And, well, I did. See, I hand drew all my symbols.
Right.
I'd have to sit down with every pentagraph pen, and I sit down there and put the symbols. And obviously, you can't make them all look the same if you're putting them in by hand.
Right.
Well, your A is going to be A. A's are A's, or dots are dots, but might not be right in the direct center of that square.
Yeah, then I assume you had to set up some kind of a chart for the colors and symbols.
Right, right. I had a chart. I had a DMC chart, and I knew. And that's what I used right up to today. All I've ever used is just the DMC strands. Some of the newer things I think are absolutely gorgeous. I really do. I think they're beautiful, but that's just what I've always used.
How many pounds of black DMC thread have you used over the years?
I can't even imagine a lot. And I mean, I'm in my office right now, sitting here looking around all this mess in here, and I have boxes and boxes of DMC, because years ago they used to send me everything.
Oh.
And I got thousands and thousands and thousands of skeins or floss colors I never use.
But never enough black.
But never enough black. Never enough black. That's right. So, but anyway, I got through that. Matter of fact, right now, I'm working on two brand new black and whites right now that I'm going to have for the next year Nashville trade show.
Yeah, and, yeah. You got to keep that concept going, I believe.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to do any more, but this about 6 months, or I guess might be a little longer than that ago, there was a lady stitching my designs that was on YouTube, and her name was Jules, and Stitching with Jules, and she started stitching my black and whites, and all of a sudden, I started getting orders for a lot of black and whites.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't, why? I didn't, why am I getting, what happened all of a sudden? And this lady out on YouTube, Jules, who I absolutely love, is stitching. she's spending a whole hour stitching one of my designs out there, and all these people are watching, and I'm getting orders, and I don't know why. And then I finally found out why. It's because this lady's doing that. So if she's listening out there, I love you, Jules.
So you keep her supplied with charts then?
Absolutely. I'll give her anything she needs.
Thank you very much. Darn right. Yep. Oh, that's great. The thing I want to talk to you about a million things, but it's this whole male and a female world. What's that been like for you as you, you must have retired and then started doing this as a regular thing. So, get heat from the family members?
I've gotten big time heat. My family members, especially my brother-in-law, he thinks you ought to be out chopping wood, fishing, you know, slaying dragons. What in the world are you doing sitting in the house with a hoop and a piece of cloth, a DMC thread, doing needlework?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I've taken a lot of heat from it. I really have. Not as much now, so, as I did in the past.
Yeah.
But, oh yeah, people perceive. I guess the first person I ever heard about going to needlework was a guy named Rosie Greer. You remember the football player?
Oh sure. Oh sure. Yep.
Yeah. Rosie Greer did it.
Yep.
And I have a lot of people. They'd say, but I didn't really care.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter to me a whole lot. So.
Yeah, I don't think we even care what Rosie Greer stitched needlepoint that he did. But for us males in the hobby, he was always our out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He was a football player. My gracious. Right.
Big, yep. Mean football player. So you could always have that. Well, yeah, but so does Rosie Greer. So get off my back. Yeah.
But I took a lot of grief, but I just kind of roll with the punches because I enjoyed it so much. I still today, I'm 72 years old, and I mean, I've been going at it a long time, and I still enjoy it.
Right.
I enjoy trying to come up with something and sitting down here trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, well, and you're getting the stitching in too, right along with it. So, yeah, because a lot of designers get so busy designing, I don't think they get to stitch near as much as they'd like, but you're keeping both ends going.
Yeah, I sit there and stitch, and my stitching isn't all that good. And I find that I'm a lot better stitching when the ball game I'm watching is not real exciting. But if you get to a real exciting game, I miss stitches. I go nuts. I sit in front of a ball game watching this. And the way my wife laughs at me because I come up here in this office, and I'll say, I'm going to work on a design. And I've got speakers up here that I blare music out. I mean, I know the neighbors can hear me. I'm playing Lady Gaga, Bruno Mars, Guns N' Roses, The Who, Jimi Hendrix. I'm playing hard rock music up here.
Uh-huh.
I love that stuff. And I got that blaring and trying to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, yeah, I do that a lot of times with music. It just cuts everything else out, and you get lost in your own little world. Yeah.
But the right now, we talked about the approach I go to design. The approach, the unique way I go about designing right now, Gary, is I come up with an idea, and I try to come up with a theme or something like a series. I don't know why I've always done that. It seemed like the thing to do, like whether it be the Williamsburg, the Black and Whites, the City Living series, Innocence, the ones I've done in the past years. But I try to come up with something new every year, something challenging for me and something that I think people out there, the stitcher, would like to stitch.
Yeah. But that really seems to be the underlying thread is designs that are challenging to you, and you basically hope people like them, but it's the satisfaction of doing something that challenges your mind.
Right, I like to do that. I all of my work, I don't. I mean, I'm just a straight stitcher. I don't put any half stitches, quarter stitches, none of that in mine. They're all just straight stitch, just straight X. All of my work, and like I say, I use DMC, and all they got all the new materials and new flosses, which again I think are absolutely gorgeous. But what I have found in my work is, and I'm local here, and I'm in a fairly big area, and a lot of the specialty flosses and things, I don't even know where to tell a person to go buy them. I mean, that's, and so I've always just stuck with the DMC, or because people in a rural area somewhere buy my design, that's available to them, whether
Right,
you go
sure.
to work store or one of the other box stores.
Right. Well, and that's, the DMC, I think sometimes we just take it for granted.
Exactly right. And but like I say, I'm not knocking any of the other three. I think the other ones are gorgeous. I mean, the ones I see in market are just fantastic.
Right.
And but it's just for what I do. I don't know if I'm too old to change or what, but anyway, that's what I go with.
Does color make it more difficult or easier to design?
I think it makes it more diff. Well, they're both there. They're both difficult. The black and whites and the color also, because the way I do the color, and I don't know how other people design. I know I talked to you one time, and you said people were designing use a program Excel, and I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, I don't know how people use Excel. I mean, I've heard it more than once. I think they get away from it because there's other software programs that are just better suited to it. But I've heard more than once of people doing designs with Excel. And I mean, I guess you just put
I
colors in.
guess.
You make the grid really small and put colors in, I guess.
Right. I think what you do at your top and bottom, you make all the cells in the various page, the same size, and then start from there. But that just seems to me would be a hard thing to do.
Yeah,
Because right now, what I'm doing is I'm coming up with an idea. I'm tracing it out on paper, drawing it briefly on paper what I think I want. And then I'm taking and scanning that in with my scanner, and I'm putting that into a programs in four different programs, really. I'm using a new program for the Mac called Affinity Photo, Affinity Designer, iDraw, and I do some work with GIF Converter. But I'll take these four programs, and especially with Affinity Designer. If let's say I've got 32 colors, or I'm going to pick how many colors I want to put in this design, say 32, I'll have one layer for each color. I'll have 32 layers in this particular program, and I'll name each one of those layers DMC number, like a black 310. And then when I'll work on a square. If I've got something 200 by 200 stitches, so you've got 20 tens across the top, I'll take that one square, 10 by 10, and I will work just on that one square with those 32 colors in that, and then I merge a lot of it together. I do a lot. I mean, I know nobody else does it like this, and they probably don't, because I have worked so a long time trying to figure out how I want to do it.
I can see how that gives you flexibility and the ability to make adjustments by having every color on a layer.
I can adjust everything very easily the way I've got it laid out.
Yeah.
And so I can adjust the colors, perspectives. I can do a lot like that. So that's the way I'm doing it right now. And so and it seems it's working. It works okay. I'm still slow. I'm the slowest person, and I can't. I swear, I'll sit down there and look at something for hours, and it just doesn't look right. And then when I finally get it right, I finally get it. I said, Ronnie, you got it right. I swear to you, that wife will walk in and say, that looks stupid. And then I look at it and I say, yeah, she's right. And I start over. And it happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, if she thinks it looks stupid and she's willing to say so, there's a lot of value in that.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what happened to me one time. It just, oh, gosh, I was sitting up here. I had a panic attack. I mean, I went nuts. I did these designs, and I'm trying to think, oh, it was the midsummer. And the midsummer, those were cottages in England and everything, a whole series of these cottages. And I had four designs that I sent to my local printer, the guy that prints for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what he did, he took one of the designs, and I had the right and left-hand side of the design in that leaflet. Well, he mixed them up and put, it was right on the right-hand side, but the left-hand side, it was of a different design.
Oh, no.
This thing's so complicated, there's no way in God's world you'd look at it and be able to tell. You just couldn't look at it and tell.
Right.
And so sends them to me. I send them all off to the World Hoffman. He's got a bunch of them. I'm selling these things. And I start getting emails from people about my design. I'm missing color. Something's not right. And I looked at it, you know, and I figured, yeah, they're right. Something, and I could never figure out, and I finally figured out what happened. So I'm sitting there emailing, texting people that I know bought these things, Hoffman, tell them stop the presses, stop everything.
Right.
Because I have people out there stitching one half of the design, which they think they bought, and the other half of it is for something entirely different.
Well, that's got to be the worst thing for a designer is having people who bought your chart get frustrated with your chart.
I had a lady one night call me from Australia in the middle of the night, wanted to know if she could change one of my colors in the writing I had on the chart from dark brown to a dark gray. Called me long distance from Australia to ask me that.
Certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please do. Yeah, so does your wife still stitch?
No. That's an easy answer. No, she quit after I started. I don't know why, but she does do a lot of work. She helps She helps me put together a lot of charts and helps me put them all in the sleeves and do a lot of mailing and all that. So she's a very big help to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think sometimes when you do what I do and you got charts all over everywhere and people call you, they don't really realize who they're calling. We're sitting at the supper table one night and somebody called and then I answered the phone and they asked me if this is Ronnie Rowe Designs. I said, yes, it is. And they said, may I have your marketing department? So my marketing department. So I put the phone over my chest, you know, and I tapped on it three or four times and then picked it back up and said, Ronnie Rowe Marketing. You know, I don't know. This is not a big operation.
Yeah. Well, you get a lot of designers. I mean, I just in talking to people, it's really clear that a lot of designers' spouse plays a major role in what they do because it almost takes two people, one to do the designing and the other to keep everything organized so that you can actually function.
Exactly right. And like I say, if you could see where I'm sitting in my office right now, what I do, you would never think I could function in this mess. It's awful. It's unbelievable. But anyway.
But your wife gave up stitching then.
She gave up stitching and then she went to, she started doing a lot of knitting.
So
she enjoys doing that. But we have a lot of things we do other than stitching. For instance, I've got a lot of hobbies I do, a lot of other things. I'm retired, obviously, at my age. And I do a lot of swimming. We go to the YMCA, local YMCA. Usually every morning I swim laps.
Mm-hmm.
And lift weights, swim laps. And got to do a lot of gardening. And also, one thing I do, probably no other designer, I bet you can't find another designer. I do a lot of crabbing. I'm on the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh.
And a doctor, the street me, my buddy, we will get up early in the morning. We do a lot of crabbing.
Oh.
So we enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. You had that age-old question, what are you going to do when you retire? Boy, you had an automatic answer.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy retirement. Retirement's great. I told somebody one time that was getting ready to retire, I said, let me tell you what retirement is. Retirement is once you retire and somebody looks at you and tells you to have a nice day, you actually got a shot at it then.
Oh, that's excellent.
You retire and they tell you to have a nice day, you actually got a shot at it.
Oh, that's excellent.
But,
yep.
But everything I've done, Ronnie Road Designs, it's just not, Gary, nothing has been planned. It really hadn't. It's just kind of
happened to you.
It just happened. It just moved along. And for a good, and it's been good too. I think one of the most satisfying things that I ever had happen to me in my whole life was, and I still have the letter. I'm looking at it right now from a gentleman out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He wrote me a 2-page letter one time back in the 90s that he had got one of my designs and it had helped him through his chemotherapy with his cancer.
Oh.
Doing that. And Gary, everything I've ever done, that's just wonderful. Think of it. I made something that this gentleman could sit down and stitch. It helped him through that.
Yes.
That's really good stuff. That really is.
Yeah, if you never do another design, it doesn't matter after something like that.
That was the best one I ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about, now you've got some animal designs, and then at Nashville you had these faces of little girls. Tell me about those.
Okay. Not this past year, the year before last, I guess it was in 18, then I went to Nashville, and after the show, I looked around. I made an effort to go around everybody's booth, everyone's room, to take a look and see what it was doing, see what the needlework industry, who was putting out what. And so I came back, and I thought, what can I do that's different? And so I got a granddaughter who is 4 years old, and so I looked at her picture sitting here. I wonder if I could do something with her picture. Something that, you know, it doesn't look like her, but it's kind of mystical or something. So I planned all that out. And that's the way it really got started. And also, those, the Innocent series with all the faces of the young ladies, I was also thinking there's so many people in the needlework industry, especially cross stitch, that people are doing this. They're middle-aged, older people. We ought to have something in there that young people might get excited about. Some young people, to get some new people into doing the cross stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about that. So that's how it came about. I did one of them, and it turned out I liked it. So I decided, well, heck, I'm gonna do 6 or 7 of these things. And so that's what it turned out.
Yeah. You really do lock into those series, don't you?
They've been big hit. I mean, they've been doing well with those. They're really good. People seem to like them.
Uh-huh.
Some people don't like them, but some people do. So,
yeah. But so just about everything, it seems, becomes a series for you.
I don't know why. I don't know. I can't get away from that series thing. I don't know. But that's what it seems like I do.
Well, there is a logical progression to that, where you have an idea, and then how many variations on the theme can you do?
Well, it's like the black and white, you know, the pen and ink series. I mean, I could have done one, but I mean, after I did the first one, I thought, hey, that doesn't look bad. I could do another one. So you just kind of stick with that for a while. I'm interested, and then I'll lose interest and go to something else. So, but anyway, then I got into somebody wanted to do cats. Somebody said, why don't you do some faces with some cats? So I did that. I had a whole series of cats I did. And then I figured, well, if I do cats, I ought to do some dogs. I did some dog faces. And so I'm working on some new dogs for next year's show, and some more black and whites. And I've got a whole brand new series coming out next year. It's going to be called The Golden Age.
Hmm.
And this is really, I'm really liking this. I got one of them I've already completed. I had a friend of mine at the YMCA, and she is a yoga instructor, and she's 38 years old, and she's from Bulgaria. And she's got this jet black hair. It's really frizzy. She's absolutely gorgeous. So I took a whole bunch of pictures of her and her looking very serious. And this is all done in a sepia colors. Only six colors in these designs.
Oh.
They're golden colors, sepia looking. And what I've done is I've woven butterflies in her hair.
Mm.
So I've got all that flowing and everything. So yeah, but I think it's going to be good. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see in March anyway. But I like them. I like them. I like them, and I think they go. I think they look good.
Yeah, got to try. That's right.
Got to try.
So when you do your designs, when you stitch your designs, you're stitching on linen, Aida. What do you use?
I use strictly 18 count material.
18 count.
And 18 count linen. I mean, I guess it's linen. 18 count Aida.
Okay.
That's all I've ever done. I mean, I would like to try linens, you know, the higher count and all that. But when I do a design and everything, for me to get the design right, I have to put it on something that I can see. It's easy for me to do, to stitch on. And I'm really not doing the design for the stitch product. I'm doing the design to put it out in leaflets and everything. So if you look at my stitching on my designs at the show and everything, I'm not the world's best stitcher by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing that for the picture to put on the front of the, you know, the front of the leaflet.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Just
so that's all I've ever used is just 18 count, 16 or 18 count.
Mm-hmm. So you, yeah, all right. You keep it pretty straightforward and simple.
I'm stuck back in the 70s, Gary. I haven't progressed.
That's all right. That's all right. It worked back then. So have you ever done other techniques?
A long time ago, I used to do some latch hooking, you know, when you were a kid and all that, but not really.
No.
Not really. No, never have. I had somebody here at the Nashville show, a lady that, that I used to do shows back in Charlotte with, Sue Hillis. And I know Sue has been in business for a long time, just like
yes.
myself. We both, you know, been there a long time. And we sit there and talk. I told her, I said, I'm still doing the same old things. Sue, to say, you know, I ain't changed a bit. She said, I haven't either, a whole lot, Ronnie. I think some of the newer things are absolutely fantastic. I really do. I mean,
yeah,
beautiful, wonderful works. But this has always worked for me, and so I'm probably going to stay where I am.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's you know, a lot to be said. I mean, there are a million toys in terms of threads and linens and a million of them anymore. And it for a lot of people that makes it fun, but there's a lot to be said for just tried and true and keeping it simple.
Well, the one thing, you know, in my having this business, Ronnie Rowe Designs, one thing I did from the very start, I had a logo, my logo with Ronnie Rowe Designs. I've kept that for 40 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of my stuff, and I guess it's just because of duration, a long duration, a lot of people buy my stuff because it's Ronnie Rowe Designs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they do because I'm a mailing list. I got an enormous mailing list.
Yeah.
Over the years. And so that's... So I pretty much keep all that the same.
We got away from it, but when you do the cats and the dogs, the ones that stick in mm-hmm. my mind are the cats because you do the eyes in color. If I recall correctly, the eyes
right.
in color and then everything else is black.
Right. It's the same concept of the pen and ink, the blacks, but I did the eyes, like you said, the eyes in color. And on the back of the charts, I tell people, if you want to change the color of the eyes, you can.
Yeah.
On these, you know. And when I started doing the cats, I didn't want to do the full body. I just wanted to do a facial part. And so I had to come up with something. What are you going to call this? And again, I'm getting back to the series. I said, it's all in the eyes.
Uh-huh.
I thought that sounded okay. And so, but the cats have done well. They're a lot of people seem to like them. And so, got various ones. I think I've had eight or something like that out right now.
Yeah, no, the thing about those cats, every time I see one, the eyes, they just, you really get them right because they just kind of bore right into you. I mean, they lock you
in. Well, that's what you want the people to see when they first look at it. I want them to see those eyes. It's right. All in the eyes. And so, and again, that goes back to the little dots on there. A lot of the white you see in that is the fabric itself. It's the pen and ink. It's still not all filled in.
Right, right. Yeah, so no, those eyes, you really get those right. It's fun to look at them.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy doing that. And like I say, a lot of people enjoy them, and so that's good.
Yeah. Now, okay, now I got to, people often want to know what the mechanics are. Are you still stitching a hoop? Do you have a special space where you stitch?
No, I just stitch in a hoop. What I normally do is take a piece of material, and I use one of these pens that you, the washable ink pens, and I lay my grid out on my paper, on my fabric. And then I'll take a chart, which I'm working on, and with my various squares with Affinity EyeDraw, and I'll print out what I want to stitch at that time that I think is already right, which sometimes it's right. So, well, most of the time I think I have it right, but sometimes it's not right, and I've stitched it, and I have to make adjustments around that.
No.
So, I mean, that's, and I don't like to do that. That just, you know, I don't pull it out. I don't ever pull anything out after I stitched it. But after I stitch some, I'll look at the graft again and think, well, the next layer or the next segment I'm looking at is not going to work into that. So I have to redesign and put it in there. But then again, that goes back to, like you say, the cats. On those cats, the only thing I really had to get right was the eyes. A lot of the stuff around is filler.
Right.
It's if you're off a square or you're off two or three squares here and there, it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like back when we had our original conversation about the tree. Put a tree in front of something. Well, you put a branch over something, it can't, you know, whether it's off a little bit, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Right.
So that's really the concept I'm going with.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think that I'm going to have to go back and look now because on those cats, I don't think I've ever really gotten beyond the eyes. I'll have to go back and look at the rest of it now. I'm not sure I have.
The rest of it. And what I'm trying to do now is I'm not doing any designs anymore that have straight edges down the side.
No.
In other words, if you picture your picture to go to a frame, if you frame something, and you've got a perfectly straight edge with squares down one side, right to left side, top or bottom, for that matter, then when you mat it, that's a real problem to make sure. Because if you're off a little bit, stretch it too much, it shows up.
Right, right.
Mine, I've got everything faded out to the top and the bottom and the sides, so it doesn't really matter.
So the framer loves you. You got some slop in there.
Yeah, because it's easier to frame.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and it's so true because, yeah, if you have that straight edge, boy, if it's off by even just a hair, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
It'll show up. It just sticks out.
Yeah.
And all my frames, I build my own frames and I do all the matting, everything. I don't make the glass, obviously, but go get a piece of glass. But I go to the local hardware store and buy the lumber, rip it on a table saw, do the routing, everything, stain it. I do all that. I mean, that's what I've always done. So
now be careful, you're gonna get requests for custom frames here.
Oh, but I have gotten cut. Oh, I have. I've got, let me tell you what, I framed some stuff for my cousin one time, four pictures, and they were huge pictures, built the frames and everything, bought the mat board, and my cost, I think, was something like $78. And when I gave them to him, good job. I framed them and everything, matted. And she asked me if I owed her anything. I said $78. And to this day, she still thinks that I ripped her off. I swear. I mean, so I tell people now, I will frame for anyone, but it's $10,000 up front.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
I didn't frame it for nobody. So I do it for myself. That's about it.
$78 for a custom frame. I'd give you that any day.
But I have, but I've done a lot of custom work for people. Their homes. I used to do people's homes when I was doing the buildings back in the early days.
Uh-huh.
I'd go take pictures of their home. I would design it, cross stitch, and give them a finished product.
Oh.
I did that. I used to, and I still do that. I still have a lot of requests today to do people's grandchildren, cats, dogs, you name it. They can come up with something, and I still will give them a design. That's about the cats, the eyes, and the dogs, and so I'm still working on some new dogs for next year, like I say, and the golden age for next year, and new black and white. So yep. We'll have some new stuff out.
Yeah, dogs. That's your built-in series right there, because everybody has their own favorite species. So
that's right. Everybody's got their own species, and at the Nashville show, I name these dogs. I give them a name, like Mr. Sam or Ms. Josie or something. I name the dog, and they say, "Well, how'd you come up with that name?" I don't know. I'm sitting here, and it just sounded good at the time. It yep. looked like that. Yep. I mean, you know, it's And one lady told me, she said, "Well, I love that dog, but my dog's not named Sam."
Right.
And okay. It was a lab. you can name it something else.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's your piece. Do what you want with it.
It's
yep.
your piece. That's right.
Yeah. All right, Ronnie. Sure have enjoyed it. Thank you.
Gary, I appreciate it very much. And again, for anybody out there, go to RonnieRowedesigns.com. Appreciate it very much. And I really hope that everyone who has ever stitched any of mine got a lot of enjoyment out of it, Gary. I really do.
Yep. All right. Thank you. And thanks to everybody for listening.